I think to move on, our last surviving co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous left us with the most famous words, I think, that will die, will remain with this movement if it ever dies, which is probably never. And those words were, let's be friendly with our friends. There were so many of these friends in AA, and if it wasn't through them, AA wouldn't have taken off the ground. Such people were the men of the clergy, men of the medical profession, and men of the psychiatric association, etc., etc. I can think of people like Sister Ignatia, who in the St. Thomas's Hospital, along with Dr. Bob, treated 5,000 alcoholics in up to the time of 1950, I think it was. And her unselfish words when she was confronted at one stage when she had no option but to give way to this anonymity, but when she was able to say, the Sisters of Charity and the members of AA who have assisted decline all individual credit. There was another theologian, Protestant minister, William Smith, who said, don't snicker when you hear the word AA. You owe a lot to a lot of people an apology. Thousands have come to see, walk, and remain to pray. There was Father Ed Dowling, the Jesuit priest, and so you can go on and on and on. There was the Reverend Sam Shoemaker, Episcopalian, and it was all through these people that we really got off the ground that we owe our gratitude to. And on my left here, I have such a man who has shown us a keen interest in Alcoholics Anonymous and who has done a tremendous amount of work, I am sure, in passing the message from his church or wherever he has moved around. And without any further ado, I'm going to hand you over to Father Struber on my left.
Good evening, everyone. You know, you have a wonderful prayer. And in that prayer, you ask for wisdom to know what you can do and also to know what you can't do. And I tonight am faced with this wonderful audience looking at me so expectantly. And who have already been treated to a wonderful program right throughout the day. I'm asking myself the question whether it was really a wise thing of me to accept the invitation to be here tonight to address you. All the same, I did accept, and so I feel I've got to go ahead with it. Now my name, as has just been told to you and on the program, is Father Charles Struver. I'm not a South African by birth. South African citizen indeed, but not by birth. I come from Holland, from Amsterdam. And I'm also a Catholic, Roman Catholic, if you like, and I'm a Catholic priest. I was ordained in this country about 23 years ago, 1948. And for the greater part of my life, until about 3 years ago, I was teaching in a seminary, and so my life was quite sheltered. I was quite away from the ordinary life which you people live in, a kind of a hothouse. And so it happened to me that about 3 or 4 years ago, in 1968, I was given the wonderful opportunity of going to Europe, and they gave me a whole year for it, and of course, I was also able to go to Holland, my native country. And you know, you must have heard a lot about Holland, because Holland is usually in the limelight when you start talking about religion, and especially about the Catholic religion. Because it seems to many people that when you go to Holland, that all the Catholics there are real rebels. They seem to be wanting to cut themselves up from the Pope and from Rome any moment. This is what you hear. And so it was a wonderful experience going to Holland, too. I spent about 4 to 5 months in Holland and the rest in the west of Europe. And I was going around talking to priests, attending meetings, and getting an idea of what was going on in the church and also in the fields of theology and the sacred scripture. And I found that there is a real revolution going on in theology and also in the field of sacred scripture, in the new interpretations of that wonderful book which we Christians possess, the Bible. And so I came back after a year to South Africa. But I found I was quite a different man when I came back from when I went to there. One of the things in which it showed itself that I'm dressed like this, I'm not dressed like the generality of priests with a Roman color and in black. After all, if you change your ideas, you will also change your actions. Otherwise, there's no purpose in thinking. And so, when I came back to the seminary, I was asked once more to continue teaching theology. Then I found it. Since there had been such a revolution, such a tremendous new approach in theology, that I was not able to do that anymore. I couldn't carry on the way I had been teaching before, and I had not sufficiently mastered the new approach to be able to be any good to the students. And so after a year of trying to do this, I asked to be relieved of the job of teaching in order to give me a bit of time to think more, to read more about what is going on in the world. And this is the reason why I was given parish work to do. And I landed up in a parish called St. Teresa's in Mayville. And this was my first experience of practical life. Really the first time I really came into contact with human beings, with men and women. And I must say to St. Teresa's is a wonderful parish because of a wonderful priest I had there for 40 years, Father Hugo. I was very privileged to be there. And naturally, as a priest, you want some work to do. You don't want to sit inside your room all day. It may be important to read and to study, but you can't do that all the time. And after all, you study in order to be of use to people. And so I wanted to get into touch with people. And so I went out. I started to visit the people. And I was very fortunate once more that in Mayville, I was able to do so. But I found the people at home, at least the wives I found at home during the day, many of them. And so during the days I was able to visit. And then when you go around visiting, you come into contact with the problems of people. And certainly one of the very first problems, a very difficult one that I encountered, was the problem of alcoholism. And so, if you are a priest and you want to help, you wonder what you can do. You seem quite powerless. What can I do to help those people? And so, it was very discouraging, I must say. I didn't know what to do. You could tell people to pray, but certainly more is expected than just that. And so, in my visitation, I also started to visit Baisley Avenue. And I also, on a Saturday afternoon, came to house number 31, where there is a friend of all of us living there. You know him all very well, Harold. And we had a wonderful afternoon, wonderful discussion, and as you can expect, I was told about Alcoholics Anonymous. And from there, it was a very short step to be invited to the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, which take place in St. John's Hall in Ripon Road in Sydenham. And I'm very grateful for divine providence of bringing me along to meet Harold, to hear about Alcoholics Anonymous, and to attend that wonderful meeting on Monday evenings at St. John's. And at St. John's, there, I found something wonderful on Monday evening. I found the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Furthermore, I found a number of devoted ladies there. Not only provided an excellent tea at the end of the meeting, but also had a wonderful meeting themselves, and they called themselves Al-Anon. And then I found also quite a wonderful and charming group of young boys and girls having a meeting of Alateena. And I was struck when I went there for the first time to those young boys and girls, the way they invited me and welcomed me into their meeting. There was something very warm, something wonderful about it. And they gave me a hang of a lot of literature. Never asked me for any money, just gave it to me. Quite strange, I'm a Catholic priest, you know. And the warmth that if it were given, the friendliness struck me. Something eminently Christian. And so I was very happy to meet A.A., Al-Anon, and Alateena. Because now I found that when I went to people and once more faced the problem of alcoholism, I was able to propose to them something very concrete. Something which has proved itself successful of being a real help and a support to those who are addicted to alcohol. Not only to those who are addicted, but also to those who have to live with people who are alcoholics. And so, my dear friends, it was wonderful for me to meet A.A. and Al-Anon. And what I found there, in those meetings, I found people whom I consider truly Christian, truly like unto Christ. I also found that these people lived by a program which I found truly Christian. And I will assure you that I'm struck by this program. And when people come to me and discuss problems with me, not only about alcoholism, but any other problems as well, I find this program of AA and also that wonderful prayer which you have got a wonderful help and a support in helping people to solve their problems and to become real Christians. And so I'm deeply indebted and deeply grateful for the group at Sydenham for what they have done to me. I think they have made me a better priest for it. You know, when I go around visiting people, it is usually the wives of alcoholics who discuss their problem with me. And when people come to me for advice, and they are faced also with the problem of alcoholism, it's usually once more the wife which comes to talk to me. Invariably, it is the husband who is the alcoholic. And I can give you one example from which I want to carry on, because all that I want to do this evening in talking to you is to discuss with you and to show you what I see so wonderfully Christian and so wonderfully Christ-like in the members of Al-Anon, Alateen, and AA, and also in their program. And here, one day, I was asked to visit a lady. She was married and already several children, about 11 children. And she asked me to come and visit her because she had a problem to discuss. And already from the very start, she started to tell me that her husband, over the last few years, had started to drink. And furthermore, during the last few months, she told me that the drinking had increased, it had become worse. And she was worried about that. She had asked her husband, "Now why do you drink?" And he had told her, "I want to drown my sorrows." And she couldn't understand that because he said he had a good job, earned a good wage, and only about a quarter of his wage he kept for himself for drinking. But all the rest he gave to his wife, for the family, to pay the expenses. And so she couldn't see at all how is it that he wanted to drown any sorrows. As far as she was concerned, he had no sorrow. And then she told me, too, that she herself was pregnant. She was expecting the 12th child. She told me as well, when I started to ask a few questions, that she herself was a very devoted mother and looked very well after her children. She spent most of the evenings with them. She never went out of the house. She was always with her children, looking after them. And then she asked me, "Father, What can I do about it? Should I go to court? And then I was faced with his problem. And after thinking for a little while, I remembered that wonderful prayer which you have. Oh Lord, give me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, and the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I also remember that whenever I come to an AA meeting, or when I go to a home of an Alcoholic Anonymous member, that I often see there a plaque with a wonderful word on it, think. And so, it flashed on me in a moment. Here is the answer I can start to give to this lady. Shouldn't I try to make her think a little bit? After all, she couldn't understand what the problems of her husband were. And then I knew also, especially from Al-Anon, that when you're dealing with an alcoholic husband, it is futile to try to change him. You can't change anybody else, but you can only change yourself. And so perhaps could I make that lady see that she herself might have something to do with the drinking habits of her husband. And this is what I set out to do. I started to point out to her that it may be the large number of children which she had, it might have something to do with the husband going to the pub and having a drink with his friends. After all, wasn't it significant that during the last few months, drinking had increased? It was only during the last few months that she had fallen pregnant once more and a 12th child was on the way. And so I asked her to put herself into the place of her husband. Now, if you were working all day, I said to her, and then in the evening you come home tired, and you come into a house which is full of children, what would you feel like? Wouldn't you rather, I said, come home a little later and first of all have a drink with your friends in the pub? After all, if you come into a house of children, it's not exactly recreation. So, I tried to make her realize that perhaps it hadn't been such a wise thing to have so many children. And then, well, she said, Father, what can we do about that? Mustn't we accept from God all the children that he sends us? Then I said, hasn't God given us also a reason with which to think? Hasn't he also given us a sense of responsibility? And I tried to point out to her, if I look at Christ, certainly he was a man who was highly responsible, responsible for his fellow human beings. And certainly, doesn't he want us to be responsible too? And then I pointed out to her that she had told me she never went out. So I said, is that a good thing? Why should you always stick at home with your children? Certainly your husband wants to go out sometimes. Why not take him to a dance? After all, if you can make his life a little bit more pleasant, there's no more reason to go out with his friends to a pub. She told me, too, that in the evening she was always dutifully with her children. In the children's bedroom, reading stories to them, telling stories to them. And her husband was left alone, the poor man. And then she found it, and when she had finished with the children, he had gone to bed. And after all, I said, don't you think that the husband comes first and the children second? Shouldn't you try and make the home a little bit more pleasant? And then perhaps you may find he'll no longer go out to drink. And so, I tried to show her that part of the trouble, in any rate, by her husband went out to drink came from herself. I asked her to pray to God to give her the wisdom to see that, and to pray to the Holy Spirit for the courage to see what she could do about it. It wasn't easy for her to change, because she felt what she was doing was the right thing to do. And then too, when you meet the wives of alcoholics, so often the question comes up, Father, what must I do? Must I leave him? Or must I stay with him? In other words, must I get a divorce? Or shall I stay? A frightfully difficult question to answer. After all, it's a question of human relationship. And a relationship which is very difficult and very crucifying to live in. And then indeed, I'm inclined to advise a stay. After all, when I look at the crucifix, I see somebody who loved it too. And he loved to the end. He never deserted the people he loved. It is the ideal. Now certainly, if I possibly can, put the ideal before people. But I find it a very hard thing to do. After all, I myself have been working in Chatsworth for 3 months. And I left it there precisely because I found it very difficult to get on with a fellow priest of mine. It only lasted 3 months and I deserted him. I look at myself and say, here you are, you deserted. You never practiced the ideal, and here you are preaching it to others. And then comes to my mind, tricky, didn't come to my mind earlier in my own case, but AA always tells me that the members of AA must have a tremendous confidence in that higher power outside of themselves. I think this is a wonderful thing. Because after all, if you're putting something which is so heroic and so difficult before people, we human beings, I feel, can never do it of our own. And we must rely on a higher power outside ourselves. And here come to my mind also the words of Christ in St. John. He says, I am the vine, you are the branches, and without me you can do nothing. And he meant nothing, therefore you are completely dependent upon me. Precisely the principle of AA. Depend on this higher power, without whom nothing can be achieved. And then, indeed, I tell people to trust in this higher power. But to tell people that and to say, pray to God, is all very well. And most of these people are praying, and are praying a hang of a lot. And still, they find it very, very difficult to face their problem. And then it comes to my mind that God does not give his help just like that, falling in buckets from heaven in his providence. It reminds me of the story that was once told of a little boy. He was a beggar with hardly any clothes on him. And there he was sitting along the side of the road. And there comes a man to him. And he addresses little boy. He tells his little boy, who was asking him for an alms, do you believe in God, my dear fellow? And he said, yes, certainly I do. And he says, you are a fool. If God existed, you wouldn't be what you are now. You wouldn't be begging like this. He wouldn't have deserted you. Ah, said the little boy, you're making a mistake. God had told someone, invited someone to help me, but unfortunately that person forgot. And so, makes me think that God's providence and God's help, his higher power, works through other people. He works through the community. And when I turn to the Bible, to the Old and to the New Testament, the fact which strikes me all the time, that God is not my God, but he's the God of his people. And therefore he works through the people, through the community. And that makes me think once more, when I'm dealing with alcoholics, or the wives of alcoholics, of those wonderful organizations, those wonderful fellowships that you've got in Al-Anon and in AA. And so I will naturally tell those people about Al-Anon or about AA and tell them to go there and meet those people. After all, here you have the people who are willing to help others, where they will find this fellowship. It is through this fellowship that this power of God will work and produce the miracle you are wanting. So, when I look at AA, when I look at Al-Anon, I find a wonderful community. And people tell me that they go to church, that they pray in church, but that they haven't had their prayers answered. What I find is when they go to AA or they go to Al-Anon, and they really understand it and cooperate, that they will find an answer to their prayers. And I think the difference is this, that in AA and in Al-Anon, Al-Anon also, you have a real friendship. People who really take an interest in one another. People who are anxious to help one another. And this is exactly what we should find in our Christian communities, in our Christian churches. When you go to church and have there a community, it should be really like the spirit you have in Al-Anon or in AA. But unfortunately, so often that spirit is not there, and we have so many individuals, they're no longer a community. And this is why when we go to church, we find it so uninteresting, so monotonous, and we rather not go there than go there. Well, I find that if you have met the fellowship of AA or Al-Anon, you will want to go there. You will want to experience that wonderful friendship and support that you get from your fellow members. And notice here too, what I see is this, that God's providence for the alcoholic, it works through other alcoholics. God's providence for the wife of the alcoholic, it works through other wives of alcoholics, Al-Anon. And so I see that alcoholics in AA and all the members of Al-Anon have a special vocation in this world to help their fellow human beings who are in a similar plight to themselves. They very much like what this little boy said. They are the ones whom God invites to help the others. And if they forget, then the others will be lost. And then, finally, my dear friends, talking about this fellowship, you see, in AA, you have people who have experienced what a wonderful privilege and what a wonderful liberation it is to have sobered up. And having experienced this wonderful privilege, this wonderful gift, if you like, they want to share it with others. They want to go out and make others experience the same wonderful liberation of sobriety. And this, my dear friends, is what a Christian community, to my mind, should be. Christians, too, should have experienced that they are liberated, that they are saved, if you like, by Christ. If they have really experienced Christ's salvation and liberation, they too should feel that joy and that willingness to share it with others. And then, like the members of AA or Al-Anon, they should go out, they want to go out, and in imparting it to others, preserve their own Christianity. But isn't it true that the member of Alcoholics Anonymous, the alcoholic, he keeps it sober, by trying to go out and give sobriety to others. And so I see that we can only be Christians if we also have that courage and that willingness to go out and make other Christians. And this, my dear friends, in my mind is the meaning of Christ when he says, go out and love one another as I have loved you. And so you see, when I start thinking about that wonderful organization of AA, of Al-Anon and Alateen, and I think of these wonderful programs that you've got, and of that wonderful prayer that you've got, that I find all of that wonderfully Christian, and that I find the members of all these three organizations true followers of Christ, true Christians, no matter whether they call themselves Christians or not. I thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Father Struber, for your very, very nice talk as far as I was concerned. And I was very, very happy to hear that you had got yourself involved with this famous group at Baisley, in which I would like to call it, I think somebody passed on a definition of Alcoholics Anonymous once, that it was a sneak approach to Christianity. And I think once you get involved with these boys, we've heard all about the type of 12-stepping that is done there, you know, till 2, 3 o'clock in the morning with 4 or 5 tape recorders, and the poor guy hasn't got a chance anyway. And that is why we have so many people here. And the growth of AA, through the help of our friends like Father Struber and these many, many groups that we have on our doorstep, have been rather terrific. I cannot pass this little thing by. It was something I picked up off a tape just a little while ago, and it had something to do with one of the greatest friends that Bill Wilson ever had. He was one of the men I think that very few of us have heard about. This is before Ebby, this is before any of the others. And he was a bishop. I think his name was Ernie Smith, a very common name. And he spoke at the 35th anniversary, and his little, the little words he used in his opening talk was, "Yes to the little bumblebee whose sex is very hard to see. It's hard to tell the he from she, but he can tell and so can she." The bumblebee is a busy soul with little time for birth control. And that is why in times like these we have so many sons of bees. This man was one of the old friends of AA. He had a very keen sense of humor, but I'm sure that he was one of the men that helped us along the way to make AA what it really is.